Good morning, and welcome back to Excerpts from the ABBA Archives. The podcast is not about ABBA, it's about us. My name is A. Kirby, and with me, as always, is...
B. Peters. You did it! Hey, good job! Nice. Alright. We only saw four movies this week. Mm-hmm. We'll get to those. Firstly, I'd like to talk about Kingdom Builder, briefly.
Yeah.
A tabletop game. We'd played it once before. We brought it back out.
I was very confused.
Yeah, we brought it back out this time, and you enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah, I quite like it.
Yeah, and then I just, like, did all the tiles out, we did all the rules, and we had two things. Anyway, that was a lot more strategy in that version, which I liked that. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Kingdom Builder, like some other games, I feel like it's just better if you just change a couple rules and just anyway.
And you make it bigger.
Yeah, make it bigger. Just want more Carcassonne. More Kingdom Builder. Anyway, so we did that.
It was very fun.
What else we do this week? A lot of editing.
We read the paper.
Yeah, we read the paper. I got a poem in the paper.
Oh, it's so good.
Got a poem in the paper. Dog Mom by B.E. Gray.
The shout out to the Humboldt Independent.
Yeah, Humboldt Independent. Best local paper this side of where we are.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what. Editor?
Best editor for Joe Kirby?
Yeah, best editor.
Yeah. Yeah, fun time. Just been a lot of hanging around the house in the storm. A lot of cuddling up. Mm-hmm. Hanging with River and Mystique. I think that's it, except for Dropout.
We've been watching a great deal of Dropout.
We have watching so much Dropout, which is a streaming service. We've been watching Game Changer, because we'd seen the clips forever on Instagram and liked the clips of Make Some Noise and Game Changer, and so we finally got it. And I've been watching some Dimension 20. We've been watching Game Changer. We've been watching Make Some Noise. And we've been watching a lot of Dirty Laundry.
Yeah.
With Lily Do.
A great investment.
Yes. $6.
You get all of that.
$6, $7 for that for a month. And yeah, it's been splendid.
Yeah.
We've been watching so much of it. And the official cast recording episode of Game Changer we were watching last night. And I would we're practically screaming in the kitchen as we make rice bowls to this amazing. It just, they improvise a musical.
Yeah, that's the game.
That's it.
It's to improv a musical,
and they do it so well.
He was like, "This is improv? What?"
It's so cool.
And they have good vocal tone.
Well, they're broad musical theater actors, yeah. So that's their job. But it's so cool.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Imagine being able to just do that on the spot.
Yeah. I could maybe do okay on Make Some Noise with improv stuff, but I'm nowhere near these folks. You can't. Wow. Fantastic.
That's a skill.
Yeah. And also, we were thinking about Dirty Laundry, which is a game where we have to guess each other's secrets or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we barely have any secrets that would qualify.
To be fair, we're 10 years younger than
most of these people.
So we have 10 years fewer secrets.
Right. But also these people are very sexually active.
so many of the secrets are just weird
sexual
awkward
encounters.
Yeah, things that just sound weird when you actually say them out loud.
And yeah, and we're just people do this? Bizarre to me that people Grant. Grant O'Brien, the bartender. The things that man has done. So that's most of our week, frankly, was just watching stuff on Dropout.
Yeah. Yeah, I like how diverse the...
It's very queer... it centralizes queerness.
Yeah. There are so many queer people. They have pronouns when they introduce people.
Yeah, they got pronouns on graphics up alongside their name. It's there's no misgendering. Like, it's kind of like taken as read that people are queer. Like,
and that people are cool with that. That's never.
Yeah. It's never an issue at all.
It's so comfortable.
It's so comfortable. Yeah. Like, some of these things these queer people be doing. I mean, queer people be crazy.
Yeah.
They'd be freaks. They'd be absolute ridiculous talking about ghosts and stuff. And I'm like, my word, queer people can be absolute idiots. But in a more fun way than straight people, frankly. Anyway.
And yeah.
Yeah. I saw how much you really responded to all of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's just very, like you said, very comfortable. Mm. Anyway. Last thing before the movies, that we saw this week, Oscar noms came out, and I just want to talk about those for a second.
Nice.
My main thing is that Past Lives got 2 nominations, mm-hmm. for Best Original Screenplay and for Best Picture. It's not going to win. It's just not. It's probably going to be the movie about a Frankenstein baby who has sex a lot. I mean, it probably is.
Yeah, it's like...
It's either that or Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, Poor Things nominated for, like, everything.
Yeah, it's 11 nominations. The only thing that has more is Oppenheimer with 13.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super happy for Past Lives, for Celine Song, for that. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about it, but Zone of Interest, cool to see. I'm surprised it didn't get a nomination for Best Editing. That stood out to me.
Mm.
John Williams in with his 54th nomination.
Just collecting them.
Yeah, it's just for Indiana Jones 5. Like, I didn't see it. I can't comment on it, but sure. I think he got a nomination for The Rise of Skywalker, and I was like, no. But that was the one good thing about that movie, was the score. I thought the score was pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't know. Just, I'll be shocked if the Zone of Interest doesn't win Best Sound. Okay, let's talk about cinematography.
Mm.
El Conde, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Poor Things. We haven't seen Maestro, so we can't comment on that. But for the other 4, who would you give it to?
Oh.
El Conde, Killers, Oppenheimer, Poor Things.
I'm not sure. I don't know. Because, like, I like how out there Poor Things looks. Like, I like how specific the look is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, like, Oppenheimer and, like, Killers of Flower Moon are going for, like, totally different
aesthetics.
Yeah, totally different energies. Yeah, and I really like El Conde as well.
The most distinct, I would say, would be El Conde and Poor Things.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the stylized pictures. And then Killers of the Flower... Do I give it to Killers of the Flower Moon? I think I might. Uh-huh. I think I might give it to Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Best Director, Anatomy of a Fall, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer... Poor Things, Zone of Interest. We have one woman nominated for Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, which I think is being a little overhyped. I think it's a pretty good court drama that is being talked about as if it's like it won the Palme d'Or. It's this huge deal, and I'm like, it's pretty good.
Yeah. I still hope to see it.
Yeah. I've seen the other 4, though. Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of scrolling around. The biggest fist pump, and it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
Lily Gladstone.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
For Best Actress in a Leading Role. First out trans actor, mm-hmm. or non-binary actor, to be nominated. Like Elliot Page,
mm-hmm.
won. Was nominated, I forget, for Juno.
Mm.
That was, you know, pre coming out. This is an out non-binary actor getting nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
And nobody's talking about it, which I'm annoyed. I'm really annoyed by. Anyway. Yeah.
And they're so great in it.
They're so good. I mean, I haven't seen Annette Bening in Naiad, and I haven't seen Carey Mulligan. But for Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of Fall, Emma Stone, and Lily Gladstone, I'm sorry, but it's slam dunk Lily Gladstone.
Yeah.
It's not close. And that's with me really liking Emma Stone and Poor Things.
Yeah. I've only seen...
You've only seen Emma Stone and Lily Gladstone.
Yeah. Yeah, and I really liked both, but yeah, Lily Gladstone. Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I'm super happy for Past Lives original screenplay. It's between that and Kane Mutiny Court Martial for my favorite screenplay of the year. Mm. Love Past Lives. And Kane Mutiny Court Martial it's weird because it's an adaptation of the Kane Mutiny. Mm. But it takes one section of the Kane Mutiny, the court martial part, and turns it into the whole movie. The whole movie is set, and all the information we get about everything that's happened is just told in dialogue.
That's so cool.
And it's really fantastic. And Past Lives is a completely different, you know, they're completely different things. Anyway. So, Boy and the Heron, Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, and Nimona. Which one are you giving it to? We haven't seen Robot Dreams, which I don't think has even been released wide yet. And we both kind of skipped Elemental because, eh.
Yeah. I mean, I really, really liked all three. Some of my favorite movies of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I might have to say Spider-Man.
You're going to give... So Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse won Best Animated Feature, which was awesome when that happened. You'd give it to Spider-Man over Nimona?
Because you adored Nimona. Yeah.
I give it to Spider-Man, kind of no problem. As much as I think The Boy and the Heron is fantastically animated, I have issues with that movie, and I thought that movie was just okay.
Yeah. I think with Nimona, like, I really like that movie, but it is kind of, like...
Rote? Not rote.
It's not rote, but it's, the things that, I don't know, like, the things that are really exciting and fresh about it are not maybe, like, the narrative beats.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse feels different.
Yeah. It is certainly the most animated movie of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. Though I would like to see, you know, the second part, you know.
Yeah.
We need to see the first half.
It's kind of inevitable.
Yeah.
That our estimation will only go up or down after seeing Beyond the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, that is a tough one because I really did love Nona though.
Yeah. Did Barbie get a nomination for Best Picture? It did. Boo! Sorry. Anyway. Barbie got a ton of nominations. I guess good for that movie that I really don't like. I mean, a costume design, production design, sure. Yes.
And I'm Just Ken.
Oh, I'm Just Ken. I mean... I wouldn't mind if Wajahe from Killers of the Flower Moon won Best Original Song. That would just be cool on so many levels.
Yeah.
But I'm Just Ken is kind of Ken. It's Ken. Mm.
Right.
Ryan Gosling, second nomination, I think, for supporting actor as Ken in Barbie. He has some tough competition. Robert De Niro, Robert Downey Jr., Sterling K. Brown, who I haven't seen American Fiction. That's probably the film with the most nominations that I haven't yet seen.
Hmm.
And Mark Ruffalo in Poor Things. Who gives the better comedic performance, Ryan Gosling or Mark Ruffalo? Also, can we talk about how potentially three, I haven't seen Sterling K. Brown, comedic performances are being nominated? I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, Ryan Gosling, Mark Ruffalo, who gives the better comedic performance?
That's a toughie. I did see Mark Ruffalo more recently, and I do like that movie a lot more.
This is true.
I'm just seeing, you know, him acting with his mustache.
Duh. What a mustache.
Yeah.
Ow. Talk about a line that was played over and over and over again in every trailer, and the movie comes, and people still cracked up at it. It was still a huge laugh line. It's so funny.
He just works it.
Yeah. Because sometimes you see a joke in a trailer a bunch of times, and then it happens in the movie, and it's crickets because it was overplayed.
And they like will show like the joke.
Yeah. But the ow. Yeah. Oh. Uh-huh. I will be very happy when either of them win.
Yes.
Robert De Niro is also very good. Robert Downey Jr. is also very good. Anyway, I think that's most. So I've seen 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Wait, oh, there's only 9? Hold on. American Fiction, Anatomy of a Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, Zone of Interest. Okay, so I've seen 7 of those. And you've seen 5 of those. Because you also haven't seen Past Lives and Anatomy of a Fall. Mm-hmm. You've seen Barbie, Killers, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Zone of Interest.
Yeah, 5. Yep.
Out of those 5, who gets it?
Ooh.
Not Barbie.
Oh, yeah, no.
Killers, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Zone of Interest.
Yeah, I kind of want to say Zone of Interest.
Really?
I feel like it has, like, the others have some stuff that I could, that, you know, I could debate a little bit in terms of, like, does it work fully for me?
Sure.
You know, like Poor Things, the premise, I think the premise, talked about.
You have to get over that hurdle.
Oppenheimer, there's, you know, like the whole discussion of what, you know, I love the movie, but like, why are we telling this person's story to a certain extent? Like, is it forgiving him too much?
Sure.
Like, there's discussion about like, why is this the perspective you're choosing to talk about, you know, about the bombing?
Yeah.
Even though I love the movie, like there's, I've heard some criticism around that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Killers?
Killers, I really like, I think, maybe kind of a similar thing in terms of perspective, because it started out being, you know, about the, you know, CIA, I think.
That was the original.
And then they moved it over, and I love how much they shifted the perspective, but
they still eventually do it.
Yeah, but they still, like, it started out in...
And it has that ending that almost makes up for it.
Yeah.
Like, legit. Yeah.
Anyway. So, yeah, so I like how much, I don't know, I like how much the perspective of that story shifted.
But as we discussed for a very long time in set.
Yes.
You can find it in the middle of our, like, 4-hour podcast. Yeah, did have issues with that.
I love all 3 of those. I think...
Barbie,
no.
I appreciate what it's going for. I think it fails spectacularly.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, I think it.
You can go back and listen to our episode on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it works.
Yeah. And though not the most depressed a movie has made me this year out of new releases, which we'll get to.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. But yeah, I think the Zone of Interest was just solid. It did what it set out to do. I take no issue with it.
Even though it's not as much of a fun watch.
No.
Like, it's not one you would rather rewatch Poor Things, Oppenheimer, Killers, and Barbie before you'd want to rewatch Zone of Interest, probably.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I would say it's not of the four, it's not my favorite.
But you would say it's the one you hold up as the most successfully realized vision?
Yeah.
It is the most successful?
Yeah.
Okay.
It just... Fair. Yeah, it just is solid to me. I don't, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Past lives for me. Just, it's easy. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. It's my favorite film of the year. Yeah. I'm so happy it got nominated. All right. All right. We saw four movies this last week. We did a double feature because we are moving in 10 weeks.
Ooh.
We are moving out of Portland, potentially for good. And our two favorite theaters are in Portland, the Cinema 21 and the Hollywood. And so we had to do, we called Nancy over to do her first grandmother shifts.
Thanks, Mom.
Take care of River while we went and saw a double feature at Cinema 21 and a double feature at the Hollywood. I want to start with a double feature at the Hollywood.
Okay.
And I'd like to talk about Edward Scissorhands first.
All right.
So, Edward Scissorhands is a movie directed by Tim Burton. Mm-hmm. It came out in 1990. It stars Johnny Depp as Tim Burton avatar.
Right.
Sad boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You like this movie. I'm told.
I love this movie. I think, potentially my favorite Burton.
Really?
It's that fairy tale quality. It just feels really sweet to me, and I always forget how much of like a bummer it is, because like,
it is very much a first half everything's going great, second half everything's going bad movie.
Yeah.
Rise and fall.
Yeah. But I don't know, it's so like simple, and I don't know, it's, and like morally it feels very simple, like the character of Edward isn't very complex, I guess, like he's just a good person, and like, yeah, he's, you know, just like a legitimately like nice person. So it's, you know, it feels very simple. It feels very fairy tale like, and it just like, to me, it just feels cute and sweet, and
sure,
it makes me I don't know, gives me the feels every time, kind of thing.
All right,
yeah,
it was a cute movie. I think its low budget is charming. It feels like, outside of Edward, like, it feels like the seed from which movies are grown. It is base movie. It is movie concentrate. Or I don't know. Like, it's as simple as it gets. You know? Outsider comes into town. Society uses, like, lifts up, hey, you're interesting, you're novel, cool. And then, but actually, we'd rather live without you, and you're actually more of a problem and an inconvenience when we have to actually integrate you, and so we'll send you back off. And it's kind of tragic. It is cute. It somehow gets me suddenly crying at the end. I'm like, oh, what? How did it get me? You did not earn this movie. Danny Elfman doing a good score. I kind of got to know Danny Elfman through his, like, scores of the 2010s, which are just not as good.
Yeah.
Compared to his work on Batman and Beetlejuice.
Oh, his earlier stuff is...
His early stuff is so much more distinctive. Nightmare Before Christmas, stuff like that. And Edward Scissorhands is a very, very good score. You're humming it out of as you're going out of the theater.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny Depp is good. Completely different performance from Sweeney Todd, but about as good.
Yeah.
Diane Wiest is the soul of this film, and the film thinks that it's Winona Ryder. That's my problem with the movie, is that it's about Diane Wiest and her relationship with Edward Scissorhands. Mm-hmm. But the film seems to think that it's about Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder's relationship. And that feels unearned and obligatory.
Very, like, heteronormative.
Yeah. And so that I just didn't buy. Now, is Winona Ryder exactly my type? Yes. So, like, I understand why the movie wanders that direction. Mm. But I remember being a kid and watching Beetlejuice and being like, oh, you're cool. Mm. You know? But yeah, I feel it feels like it falls into, I know everything about where this movie is going. I know everything it's about to do, and and it just does it. It doesn't do a twist on it. It just does it.
Yeah.
Burton's world, I feel, is more interesting when directed by David Lynch. You want to see the deconstruction of Americana? Watch Blue Velvet or Eraserhead or any movie directed by David Lynch, and it will be more interesting than anything I've seen from Tim Burton. I'm sorry.
Oh.
Tim Burton feels like baby's first David Lynch.
Mm. I think in terms of the romance for me, like, on paper, this wouldn't work for me. What makes it work is, I think, Johnny Depp and Winona Ryder.
Fair. Like, and also that moment with the snow.
Yeah.
That is a moment of true wonder. Mm. That was the highlight of the film for me.
Yeah, I think they're just so charming. Especially Johnny Depp, takes very little, like, minimal dialogue and, you know, gives it...
They fill the screen. They have a very big presence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Puts a lot of emotion to very few words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
169, as we learned in the fun facts portion before the film.
Yeah.
It was a dress the part at the Hollywood, so there are a bunch of people cosplaying, which is cute.
Yeah.
Your mom doesn't like this movie because scissors for hands?
Apparently just can't get past that premise. And one thing I like about it, I guess, is that it's doing a lot of, like, classic universal horror, you know, like...
Okay.
It's, you know, it's the castle on the hill, it's this dramatic, you know...
There's the inventor!
Yes.
Who, Vincent Price, outside of The Ten Commandments, and an animated film, I'm blanking. Oh, he's in The Great Mouse Detective.
Mm.
My first Vincent Price film. So yeah, my second Vincent Price film.
So you need to see House on Haunted Hill.
I know. I need to see all the William Castle movies. I know. Yeah. I need to see the William Castle
House
movies.
House on Haunted Hill is delightful.
And The Tingler.
It's so fun.
And
very much a ham is very fun.
I want to see Theater of Blood. Whitney and Bibbs and Whitney have been singing to me the praises of Vincent Price as long as I have been listening to them. And this is his final role. He's good.
Yeah. I like that it's doing the classic universal horror, but make it just sympathetic. You know, like, obviously, explicitly.
Right.
Like, we're sympathizing with this person who's living this. You know, we even have, like, instead of a literal monster being... chased down by villagers.
It's a cookie robot.
It's a cookie robot being chased down by...
It's a cookie robot with
suburban
a heart.
Moms. Yeah.
And scissor hands. Yeah. I love... My favorite character in this movie is the dad. I love the dad in this movie. Who plays the dad?
Alan Arkin.
Oh, of course. No wonder I recognized him. Yeah. I was like, I recognize you, but... Where do I know you from? Oh, it's just I don't know you this young. I've only seen your movies like Little Miss Sunshine and Argo and, you know, movies where he's older. I love Alan Arkin in this movie. I love how I love Diane Wiest and Alan Arkin in this movie. I love the way that they bring him into the family so nonchalantly. Mm-hmm. So it's like we've got a queer kid in the family now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a queer kid.
Yeah.
We're going to treat him like any other kid. They're a little bit different. We compensate by doing the best we can. It's really good. It's really sweet.
And they're both eccentric in really wholesome ways.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, she's the Avon salesperson.
Doing her best, blanking.
Madeline Kahn.
Madeline Kahn.
Hello! 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 Howard!
yes. And Alan Arkin is just, I don't know, he's positive masculinity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's wholesome dad.
Yeah.
Good
dad. Really good dad.
Yeah.
Second movie, Johnny Depp movie in a row we've seen where he moves his hands really fast.
With blades.
With blades to show prowess at a skill. Oh. My biggest issue with the film, I would say, is this guy does a lot of hedge trimming and ice sculpting. Uh-huh. Where do the hedges and ice come from? They just randomly appear. Like, oh, look, he turned the hedge into a dinosaur. There was no hedge there before. Dude's a magician.
We have plenty of establishing shots.
Yeah, we have so many establishing shots of this neighborhood, and then hedges suddenly appear. I'm like, no. Where did you get those tons of ice? In California. yeah. It's cute.
Yeah.
I see everything that it's doing, and it does it pretty okay. That's what I can say.
Yeah. My issue with this movie is not...
It's the context.
Is the context from what I know about Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, this movie, taken in a vacuum, it hits for me. I really like it. Unfortunately, it kind of has, like, some... like unfortunate connotations in the sense that it feels very much like just the typical Burton self-insert fanfic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, which is very much like, you know, a cishet white man who wants to be the other so bad and perceives himself as othered, or like, you know, is telling the story of someone who's othered, but it's, you know, a pale, you know,
straight white guy. Yeah.
And like,
please.
and because Burton is like so exclusive of like people of color, you know, and like doesn't understand how systemic racism works, or like how,
and says that they don't belong in his movies.
Yeah. And doesn't understand the history of like black exploitation or black cinema, and like how it's not separate is equal, kind of like,
yeah.
Yeah, just how he doesn't understand how like actual otherness works.
And like, so that aspect of the film doesn't age.
Yeah. And so it feels kind of like, what are you talking about? You know, why are you the one talking about otherness?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, it is very much a sad white boy movie.
But if I could, ignore, you know, whatever feelings I have toward Burton now, I love the movie.
Okay.
So.
You know what I love more than Edward Scissorhands? RRR.
Yes.
We finally saw RRR. So the Hollywood is doing a thing where they're with, like, the Clinton Street Theater has been showing the Rocky Horror Picture Show every week since 1975.
Even during the pandemic.
Even during the pandemic, they played it to an empty house for 54 weeks.
Yeah.
Straight. The Hollywood is now doing a thing where they're trying to show RRR on their big 50-foot screen once a month forever. And boy, do I hope that
yes,
continues.
Please.
One of the best theater experiences we've had in entire lives.
Great audience.
Packed house.
Mm.
packed to the brim.
And they're also engaged.
Yeah, thousands of seats.
They love
and
the
it's
movie.
Full.
Yeah.
And this is a over 3 hour movie. Mm. It's got an interval. The amount of cheer moments. Avengers Endgame got nothing on RRR.
They are
screaming at the title. They are screaming at the director credits. They're just screaming every time a character is introduced. Like, with boos and cheers and oohs and, like, laughs and just... It's the height of cinema going.
Mm.
And RRR, the reason that we'd waited so long is it's been on Netflix forever. It's dubbed on Netflix. It's in Hindi.
Mm.
It's not a film that was shot in Hindi. It's shot in Telugu.
Yeah.
This is a Tollywood film, not a Bollywood film.
Yeah.
So we wanted to go see it in the original language. So we hadn't seen this movie. Oh, my word.
Mm.
What? The best bros? Best bros in a movie ever?
Historical fan fiction bros.
Historical fan fiction bros.
But what if they met and were like best bros?
What if they're best bros? This was such a delight. I loved seeing this movie. I screamed, I cackled, I howled, I cheered. I fist pumped. I did all the things. It was ecstatic movie going.
Peak engagement.
Yes. The movie is also great.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very, very fun movie.
Mm.
Incredible maximalist filmmaking.
They know how to do fun and
yeah,
and
they
awesome.
Know how to do action. Like, what did you say? This is the coolest action's ever looked for you?
Yeah. Because, like, usually I'm really bored by action. Usually when they're, like, men, you know, and violence and men, I'm like... okay, you know, like, mm-hmm. I'm bored out of my mind, but this, I, you know, was like legitimately cool.
Yeah.
I was like legitimately like enjoying all of the, like, you know, awesome.
And you've seen Bollywood films, and I had not.
Yeah.
Going into this was my, as far as I know, first Indian production film that I've seen, which I'm sorry. I could tell you all about other countries' cinema, but not this one. My bad.
Yeah, and I've seen a handful, but because I like my mom
mm-hmm.
likes Bollywood.
Yeah, she's going to India next month.
Yeah.
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 For a month.
Hmm.
Yeah. Hope she has fun.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Imagine if she went to see RRR. In India.
Yes, she'd better see some movies in Hindi.
Okay, can we talk about how your mom... So she watched this
oh
movie.
My gosh.
She was so we told her about how we were going to see this movie. So she watched it on Netflix while we were at the theater.
Yeah.
And we come home and she's like, oh yeah, I had seen that movie before. I forgot.
And we're just like, how?
How did you forget... Your mom has this thing where she forgets that she sees movies, that she's seen movies. And she does it a lot and with very memorable movies.
Yeah, and,
I don't understand how she does this.
And I'll be like... Oh.
She treats it so nonchalant. And that is horrifying to me.
And I'll be like, Mom, remember I have this sweet memory where we watched this movie together? And she'll be like, oh, did we? Love you, Mom.
Wild that she forgot this. I don't know. It is. I have issues with RRR.
Yeah.
I think it's very hero worshipy. It's very Randian.
Yeah.
Not a fan of that.
Yeah.
Not a fan of its gender politics.
No.
I like its portrayal of positive masculinity.
Yeah.
As broy broy.
They feel like wholesome guys. Like,
yeah.
Like they're like very like masculine bros, but like,
yeah.
But like they're like chill.
Yeah. And your mom mentioned this. She knows more about. This kind of stuff than we do, but about what she said, like that crying is a symbol of strength,
or like an ability to change, and so like it has an important function in this story,
yeah.
As like showing that this person cares and like feels.
So these men have whole ranges of emotions in this movie. It's not, they're not stoic.
It's so, and that's so refreshing to see as like an, as a, you know, someone familiar with Western portrayals of masculinity, and especially Western portrayals of like men in action movies.
Yeah.
Like the, these types of like awesome
they
men.
They smile and they cry and they hug. They're chums.
Yeah.
They're good. It is a delight. It's very anti-imperialist.
Which is very satisfying for it to just be decisively anti-imperialist.
It is, however, it does, you know, see violence as an answer. This is not a pacifist film. This is a, we need guns to free our country.
And I think this is the film. I remember in my...
It is a propaganda movie.
Yeah.
This is an out-and-out propaganda movie. This is... I likened it to I Am Cuba, the film made by a Soviet director in Cuba in the wake of the Cuban Revolution, which is just blatant propaganda. This is why we need a violent overthrow of the government. And this movie does that. Just except it's India.
Yeah. Speaking of like the need for violence, like, or like, I don't know, the portrayal of violence, I think this is the film where like my history teacher for like modern history was talking about like, you know, post-colonialism and like, specifically like Indian independence. And how at the end of this movie, they show a whole bunch of leaders of, like, people who fought for
Indian. If you didn't think it was a propaganda film before the credits, during the credits, it literally has, like, propaganda shots of various Indian leaders, freedom fighters, one of whom allied with the Nazis against the British.
But the reason it was mentioned in this class is that it doesn't include Gandhi, who we would think of as, like, the one
the main
dimension.
One.
Yeah. But he's the pacifist.
Yeah.
And they don't show him, and it's, you know, intentional. And that there's, like, political reasons of, like, I think it's, to my understanding, that there's some desire to distance their image from Gandhi.
Yeah. Who himself has dubious stuff that man has done.
Yeah.
With children that we need to anyway,
but
so it has maybe some messy politics.
I feel like
and its depiction of specifically women's role in Indian society as very, very subservient,
and especially I think when I see all, like, movies that hype up men's physical strength to, like, ridiculous degrees.
Oh, yeah.
I'm always, I don't know, sensitive to the fact that they don't change women. Like, they don't do the same thing for women. And so, like, you'll have a man who can, like, punch a guy and he'll fly across the room.
We have the two introductory scenes of the men in this movie.
Yeah.
Which, again, so many cheer moments. We have the ultimate cop who takes on 1,000 people and wins.
And
then we have a dude taking on a tiger.
And so it feels to me, and this isn't just this movie, but, like, I'm thinking specifically in, like, comic depictions, other, sure, like, similar mediums where they have, like, heightened action.
These dudes be jacked.
Yeah, and when it comes to men, everything can be heightened and over the top, and the violence is way, way more than could ever be physically possible for any human being. Mm-hmm. And that's just, that's just how we portray men. It's heightened, it's over the top, that's fine. But if you ever show a woman having any of that same heightened, over the top action,
it's campy and ridiculous.
Right. Women could never be that strong. No woman could ever have a muscle ever once. You know, and it's, and, it, And it's like, wait a minute.
No woman could ever have a muscle, not even once.
And like, I, you know, grew up in a rural area that has a lot of strong, like, farmer type women. Yeah. And it's like, and so from my perspective, it's like, have you seen women?
Have you seen women?
What women do you know?
Yeah. So again, we have issues with the movie.
Yeah.
But there are moments in this film, the dance battle, the scene with the bridge when they first come together, the attack on the palace, the prison break, the forest battle at the, like, it's
the
spectacle in this film is kind of unmatched.
It makes things that I would think would be ridiculous look good.
Yeah.
Any of these scenes I would think would be ridiculous.
With a super intense song about the power of friendship.
Right.
Friendship is the thing between the head and the guillotine. Whoa.
Like, I think you think it wouldn't work, but it works so well. They just they hit it just right.
And just knowing that this isn't an outlier in Bollywood and Tollywood cinema. Mm-hmm. This is just the one that happened to break out in the States. I'm like, what is over there? What is in there? What treasures?
Wait a minute.
Have we yet to discover? We lowly American action movie cinema goers.
Yeah.
The heights to which others have traveled and we have not even dreamt of. Anyway, so yeah, know that what a splendid time.
Yeah, would recommend if.
Oh yeah, yeah. If this is worth a trip to Portland.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, come to Portland just to see RRR on the Hollywood big screen.
Yeah, and the sound quality is great.
No, the Hollywood theater is a gorgeous, gorgeous theater.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the Hollywood. I want to talk about the Zone of Interest next.
Yes.
So the first of our two features that we saw at Cinema 21.
Mm-hmm.
We saw RRR first and then Edward Scissorhands, both on the big screen, on their big screen. We saw the Zone of Interest on Cinema 21's big screen.
Mm-hmm.
From my favorite spot, which is front row of the balcony, center row of the balcony.
Yeah.
Front row of the balcony. Center of the front row of the balcony of the theater one. Again, I love this theater. It's where we saw Tar.
Mm, Tar.
Remember when we saw Tar together?
Yeah.
After going to the symphony?
Yeah, and I remember thinking, wow, we've seen so many movies together.
Yeah, we have seen.
And it's only on the first page.
Yeah, no, that was our 15th film we saw together. We have seen about, 270 movies since then.
Yeah.
yeah, we're at 292. We're almost at 300.
Whew.
Yeah. Anyway, so we saw The Zone of Interest. Jonathan Glazer, you haven't seen any of his other films.
Is that true?
Well, let's see what else he's directed. Now, we know your grandfather has seen it.
He wants us to watch Birth.
This is by complete coincidence. Your grandfather, George, and Nancy were talking about Birth this week. A Nicole Kidman movie from early 2000s. And he gave us brought the DVD over so that we could watch it. We still haven't seen it. We're going to get to it. And I was just looking at it, like, oh, it's also directed by Jonathan Glazer. So, anyway, I know him from Under the Skin, the Scarlett Johansson Alien movie. But his first film since then, at least in terms of features, went in, I knew only one word in terms of its premise, and you knew nothing.
Yeah, I knew The Zone of Interest.
And I knew the one word, Holocaust.
Hmm.
that in like my trying to skip past Bibbs and Whitney's talk about it in their when they were talking about their best films of the year, because I didn't want to hear anything about it before I'd seen it. I at one point heard Holocaust and I was like, ah, dang it. We're going to talk full spoilers about The Zone of Interest and the other film that we saw together, which is All of Us Strangers. So, Nancy, you haven't seen these movies, so stop listening.
Go watch them.
Go watch them. Go watch them, please.
Yeah.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts, Nancy, you in particular. Mm-hmm. So The Zone of Interest is a movie about the Holocaust. It's about the director of the Auschwitz camp. Mm-hmm. It's about a husband and a father who works hard, who does his best to raise his family as best he can. Who tries to make his marriage work despite all the hardships that come with his high level job, his obligations to the state, you know, trying to make his boss Hitler proud.
trying to get that promotion kind of thing, or like his, trying to.
And then, yeah, and Sandra Hüller from Anatomy of a Fall plays his wife, and she's trying to run a good house. She's trying to maintain a relationship with her mother. She's trying to make sure her kids are all right, and that they have a good education, and that they come up as best as they can. She loves working in her garden and designing her backyard.
She has her dream house.
She has a dream house that she's worked so hard for.
Yeah.
Right over the wall of this dream house is the Auschwitz camp.
Right next door.
Right next door. And the film keeps us away from there.
Yeah.
It is about the cleanliness of this house. It is sanitary. It is clean. It is quiet in the house. But there's always just in the background, we can hear the camp. And we can see the smoke coming from the camp that is people.
Yeah.
They're out fishing. Oh, the ash. It got into the river. Little talks about new designs for a crematorium.
Where they don't use the word people.
No.
They don't say
board meetings people. Where they're discussing the allocation of resources and the movement of people across borders, trying to get that bureaucracy taken care of. You know, how to best exterminate hundreds of thousands of lives.
Yeah.
This movie is pretty much all wide shots. That's one of the first things I noticed. It is very far away from its people. We are looking at them. We are not with them.
No. We don't feel connected to any of them when we're not supposed to.
Yeah.
This
film begins with an overture. Michael Levy's score for this was not nominated for Best Original Score. Screw that. I love the score to this movie. It's very sparing. So it is an unconventional approach to the domestic drama. You know, it's a bit further back. And then every now and again, the movie breaks. And tears itself apart trying to tell you about what that the most horrible thing in human history is right over the wall.
Yeah.
And the camera is refusing to go there, so the film just breaks now and again. It's I don't know. That's it. You talk.
I think the line, I don't know, one of the lines that really stood out to me, I forget exactly how it's phrased, but there, it's the wife in the garden with the mother, mm-hmm. with her mother, and she's talking about this garden, and they're like, oh, what a lovely garden, oh, you've done so well for yourself, and there's a brief reference to the wall when she says, oh yeah, we're trying to cover up the wall by planting some vines on it.
Yeah.
And I think that line of, like, they have this, like, you know, paradise-like garden of, like, the, you know, their dream garden with a pool and a slide for their kids so the kids can play. And they've got this wall, you know, with this camp right next to it. But, oh, well, let's just put some vines on it. Just put some flowers on it. And that's better, you know? And when, you know, they might have to move, they don't want to leave this house. Because mm-hmm. it's the perfect house, you know?
Yeah.
They want to be here. They want their kids to be here.
Yeah. They're proud of the work they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, it was that line, and then I think there's a line towards the end where the husband has gotten put in charge of moving all of these, you know, hundreds of thousands of people across borders.
Yeah, the Jewish population of Hungary.
Yeah, and to be killed or...
To be murdered, to be exterminated.
Or made
or turned into slave labor, yeah. those who are able.
Yeah. And he has a phone call home where he's like, you know, it's the honey, I have great news. I got the promotion. It's that phone call.
I'm coming back.
And he plays it like that, where it's, mm-hmm. you know, tell the kids I'll be home. I got the promotion. They're going to name it. They're going to name this operation after me.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, oh, that's great, sweetie. Like, very much like, you know,
mm-hmm.
you'd think 50s, you know, guy at office, you know, yeah. like, he's not saying, hey, sweetie, I'm going to help in the murder of hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, millions.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to help in murder of millions. He doesn't say that. It's, I got the job, sweetie.
Yeah. You know what it just clicked for me is that this movie is depicting, it's taking, you know, these horrible people who we would never want to associate with. You know what their life is?
Mm.
It's a 50s American sitcom.
Yeah.
It's the ideal life. Like, it's just... Yeah.
Profiting off of other people.
Yeah.
Other people's death.
I this film's kind of fantastic. I would have loved if it had gotten even more experimental.
Mm.
I think it's a fantastic double feature with Killers of the Flower Moon,
mm-hmm.
in that it is depicting the horrible people who do this horrible stuff, who treat it nonchalantly.
Mm.
I think it'd be a great triple feature with Killers of the Flower Moon and El Conde,
mm.
which is about Pinochet. El Conde is a bit different in that it's very much a satire comedy, and Killers of the Flower Moon and Zone of Interest are very much downbeat dramas. But Zone of Interest may be kind of like halfway in between there. You have the super, super long downbeat drama of Killers of the Flower Moon. And then you have Zone of Interest, which kind of takes a bit more experimental, distanced. You can laugh in absurdity at the absurdity of it. And then you have El Conde, which is just an out-and-out comedy.
Mm.
It's He's a Vampire! Mm. You know? Yeah, the bit that I wanted, there were moments in this film where I just wanted to just lie down on the ground and just curl up. Hmm. Like, this movie really, really got to me.
Hmm.
And I didn't really have enough time to process it before our second film started. But just after the poem. There's a poem that we... There are a couple moments where it cuts away to negative footage or like night vision footage of a girl putting apples in the ground. She, at night, She picks apples and puts them, hides them behind shovels and in the dirt for the people that we never see. Mm. And she finds a note where she had hidden her apples. And it's a piece of music. And we never hear the words spoken. We just hear the notes and we see subtitles of the words. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful poem of a refusal to give in to hopelessness in the face of the worst act of violence in human history. And then after that, it's just a scene of Sandra Euler wandering about the house, looking for her mom and like looking at a note and just going down for breakfast and just little domestic thing. And she just, and I'm just like, I just want to crumple and fall or scream. I need to do something. And the film's refusal to give in, to have that moment where people just scream. Except for when the film breaks. And then the film at the end, right after this phone call, which you mentioned, the film breaks. And it does a very similar thing to Killers of the Flower Moon, which was jump ahead and see how we're framing the story now.
Yeah.
With Killers of the Flower Moon, it's the radio play. And Martin Scorsese shows up and reads Molly Burkhart's obituary that doesn't mention the murders and how I've framed this story this way. I didn't have to, you know? Mm. And taking himself to task for that. It's a beautiful ending. And The Zone of Interest does a similar thing in that it just cuts to the cleanliness is now inside the walls. And now we are preserving not the garden, not the house, but the camp so that you remember these people. Mm. You know, we see the shoes and the suitcases and the crematorium, and it's all perfectly clean. And just, yeah, as Haas looks down the hallway, like mildly nauseated, and walks down the staircase into a black void. It's a fantastic ending.
Yeah, and I really like those shots of the people like vacuuming that space.
Again, cleaning. We've seen the people cleaning that house in that garden, taking such pristine care of it. And now that place where there was nothing but blood and ash and skin and flesh and dirt and grime. Now that's the place being kept clean.
Yeah. But I liked those shots of like these just piles and piles of shoes of dead people.
Have you ever been to a Holocaust museum?
I've not.
Okay. That was the one main museum that I didn't go to when I was in DC. I went biking with my dad to see a bunch of different memorials across in the outer regions. We went on a morning bike ride when my mom and brother went to the Holocaust Museum. I wish I had gone to see the Holocaust Museum. That was my one big, I wish I had done this from the trip. But yeah, mom, my brother just came out. It's the piles.
Yeah.
It's the piles of shoes. It's something so simple.
And I liked how mundane it was, that this is someone's job. This is someone's just regular job where, you know, I vacuum at work and they I vacuum at work at a pizza joint and they vacuum at work next to this pile of shoes of all those people.
Yeah. It's not one that I'm gonna eagerly rewatch all the time, But I do want to see it again. Yeah, it's one of the better films from last year.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think another aspect that stood out to me was, I don't know, like, there's almost, like, at first, like, this kind of impulse to see how, to gauge how, like, culpable these people are. Because, I mean, the husband is obviously doing a job that he knows. Of course, he has to see the people.
He is aware that he has murdered hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. Yeah.
You know, the kids, at least, you know, the little ones, you know, probably
aren't really aware.
They're being indoctrinated into it.
Yeah.
And they're still kids. And then there's the wife. And at first, she doesn't really talk about it. She doesn't mention what her husband does. She just talks about the work that she's doing around the house. And, you know, talks with some friends about friend-type stuff. But she doesn't really talk about what's going on in the country or anything. And then there's this one line that you know, that sinks it, you know, where it's, you know, right after she's wandered around the house looking for her mom, she comes downstairs mm-hmm. and is talking to this lady and says...
Who knew that her mother had left, yeah. but had still set out a plate.
Mm.
It's like, did you do this to spite me?
Mm.
I could have your ashes spread out across, like, across the area. I forget what she says.
Yeah. And it's like, oh no, she knows exactly what her husband's doing.
Yeah.
She knows her husband is murdering thousands and millions of people. It doesn't affect her. Like, it doesn't. And she wants to stay in this house.
Has completely compartmentalized.
She wants her kids in this house right next to this camp, and she knows exactly what's happening.
Yeah.
And she has this nice idyllic view of this.
Yeah. The way that the mom leaves because she can't sleep. Because all night you hear screams.
Yeah.
And you see fire and ash of dead bodies. And the mom... We never see the note that she writes, her daughter, but we assumed that she's on some level not totally cool with this.
Yeah.
At least she can't get a good night's sleep.
But we're not shown that note because we're not going to think about that. No. We're not going to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's any indictment, we don't get to see it.
Yeah. But I loved that line to show, no, there it's not... It's, you know, don't pretend.
There's no ignorance here.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing. Yeah. It's stupid, but X-Men 3, The Last Stand.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever talks about genocide. They just do it.
Yep. Thanks, Ian McKellen.
Yeah, thanks, Brett Ratner.
Yeah. That is a very good line.
Yeah.
And boy, does it hit.
Yeah. Fascism. It's back in style these days. I'm having nightmares about it.
Mm.
And this movie... Past Lives doesn't have a shot at Best Picture. Zone of Interest does. Mm-hmm. Maybe. And I would like it to win.
Yeah.
It'll probably be Poor Things or Killers of the Flower Moon, but I would like the Zone of Interest to win.
Yeah, I'd be happy with any of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, Zone of Interest would be.
Yeah. Well, at least we can talk about the nice rom-com.
Aww.
The nice romantic drama.
Yeah.
All of Us Strangers.
Hmm.
How was The Zone of Interest not even close to the most depressing film that I saw that in this double feature?
Yeah.
Okay. You talk about All of Us Strangers.
Yeah, so I was, like, super hyped to see this movie.
Yeah, I was less so because I'm like, dramas, it seems kind of... I'll see it. Bibbs really liked it. Dave and Alonzo really liked it. The queer people in my life that are film critics have seen this movie. and really enjoyed it. Whitney had a little bit of an issue with the ending, but really, really liked the rest of the movie. And you were very excited to see it.
Yeah, it looked like a sensitive rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
It looked queer. It looked
very queer.
Smart.
Maybe a good double feature with Phantom Thread.
Yeah.
It's about a couple, and the one guy who's like an artist is also dealing with some unresolved stuff with his mom. Uh-huh. They literally played the score for Phantom Thread before the screening. Like, Cinema 21 plays music, movie music before every screening. And for All of the Strangers, they just chose the score from Phantom Thread, which is honestly perfect.
Yeah.
Anyway, so continue.
Yeah, and you know, so I really enjoyed most of this movie.
Just talk about you watching this movie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the romance. I liked
Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal.
Yeah, I'm, you know,
it's very tender.
It's so he is a writer who keeps
Andrew Scott,
who's going back and
to his childhood home.
Yeah, and revisiting his parents. And my interpretation of, like, because he keeps...
Who were dead.
Yeah.
Died when he was a young kid.
And he's still dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we had different interpretations on this. So my interpretation was that he is a writer who has, you know, he's got some paraphernalia from when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. And he's remembering the memories associated with this stuff. And he's going back to his home and thinking about his parents. And he's imagining... what if they were to see me now?
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of has these fantasies about what if they were to meet me now? Would they, you know, accept me being queer? How would they react? You know, I have this desire to connect with these people, but could that even happen in a positive way at this point?
These are parents who are, you know, middle class, white, heterosexual parents from the 80s, their views on queerness is antiquated, literally.
Yeah, and they're stuck in that time.
They haven't aged well, literally.
Yeah, and because not only are they old, but they died before they, you know...
Before they got to know their queer kid.
And before they got to see how the world changed.
They don't understand the concept of gay marriage.
Yeah, and... You know, I thought that was really cool that, like, you know, he's dealing with these relationships, and then he's also dealing with, you know, this new partner.
Relationship, yeah.
And that there's this tension between the old relationship and the new, and that he needs to settle his past trauma.
Yeah.
And
he needs to deal with his grief.
Deal with his grief and maybe come to terms with who he is to a certain degree. And move on and be with this new person and open up.
Yeah.
And that's the tension.
Yeah.
Throughout the movie.
And it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I love all this stuff. Claire Foy and Jamie Bell play his parents, and they are both fantastic. Mm. Jamie Bell in particular, I loved as the dad. And my word, if they didn't get me to frickin' tear up.
Yeah,
this is a three hanky movie. This is one year old. We heard lots of crying in the theater.
The most queer men I've ever seen in one space.
Oh yeah, we were surrounded by gay men.
Yeah,
gay men, lesbians, young and old, like just lots of sniffles.
Yeah.
The scene between Jamie Bell and Andrew Scott. After he came out to his mom is so good. Like, you could hear the sobs of people around us, but just like, and I was among them. Like, it just, it's so sweet. It's everything you want. And like, kids these days, they do have it easy, you know? Yeah. They do have it easy.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. And it's satisfying, you know, he
seen in the diner.
Yeah.
Oh, frick.
He does it. He resolves that mm-hmm. issue and is able to let go of them.
Yeah.
And he lets go, and it is just, you know, they're gone now. Yeah. And that's okay. And now we can move on this new relationship.
Yes, with Harry. Can I pause? Mm. I've also been watching this movie.
Yes, tell me how it's going.
It's a ghost movie.
Yeah.
It's a movie about he goes to his old house and there are the ghosts of his parents. Mm. And he can talk with the ghosts of his parents who don't know how they died. Like, but they're just like, yep, we're here. And so he gets to chat with his ghost mom and ghost dad. Mm. Like, do I believe in ghosts? No. Mm. But I, in the world of this movie, mm. it's a ghost story. It's a haunted house picture. He goes to his childhood home and there are his parents still in that house, still unresolved. One assumes that he may never have gone back. And after his parents died and he went to live with his grandmother in Ireland. So he's going to the house and it's haunted with his parents. And so he's able to finally they have unfinished business. That's the whole thing with ghosts. Mm-hmm. And so he's able to finish that business with them. And it's beautiful. So that's the movie I've been watching. I've been watching a ghost story.
Yeah.
And you've been watching a movie about a writer who is using manifested avatars.
Yeah.
To help his writing process.
Yeah.
And also help him overcome his grief.
Yeah.
Okay. We come to the end of the last two scenes of the movie.
Yeah.
Up until this point, you have loved this movie.
Yes.
And I have loved this movie.
Yeah. So I'll say what happens.
Yeah, yeah, you can say what happens. Full spoilers. And, yeah. Nancy, you better not be listening.
Yeah. And so he gets... to the building that they both share.
Yeah. So we forgot to establish that Andrew Scott and Harry and Paul Mescal mm-hmm. live in this apartment building where it's literally just the two of them. It's mm-hmm. like a new apartment building. They're the only ones there. And one night, they had their mute cute when Paul Mescal came up super drunk. Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, and he was like, you're too drunk, go to bed.
Yeah.
And then they later reintroduced each other and they did hook up and they began seeing each other and the relationship got deeper and deeper.
Yeah. And so he gets there and he's gonna go to Harry's
apartment, which he's never done before.
Yeah. And he's gonna go there and he's gonna, you know, give it a try, because he tried to take Harry and meet his parents and it didn't work and Harry freaked out and ran.
This is true. He's like, see my ghost parents?
Yeah.
And Harry's like, what? Ghost parents? I'm sorry. You're just banging on somebody else's house and we need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's also been like a lot of trippy dream sequences that have been happening, which are beautifully edited.
Mm.
And shot, like, they are trippy.
Yeah.
The shot in the bed
mm-hmm.
is wild. Anyway, he's going to Harry's.
Yeah. And he gets there and he finds Harry dead in the bathtub.
No, he's in bed.
In bed. Oh, in bed?
Is he in the bathtub? I thought he was in bed.
Well, he's lying down somewhere, dead.
He's lying down, dead.
Presumably.
He's holding the same bottle he was holding when they first met.
Yeah.
So assume it was that night.
Yeah.
He died.
And which means none of this relationship ever happened. I'll say, because we interpreted this differently, none of this ever happened while he was alive.
Yes.
And so in my interpretation...
Just keep going.
Okay. I'm giving my interpretation.
No.
As I saw it.
Well, with okay. what we see.
Okay.
For the rest of the movie.
And he's, you know, he's sad. And then we see...
Harry shows up.
Harry shows up, and this is the Harry that he's been seeing.
Presumably for this.
For the whole movie. This is the one that he's had a relationship with, who is like, why are you down here? And then is like, you know, that's me in there, isn't it? And he takes him back, and he's kind of freaking out.
But Andrew Scott reassures him, takes him to bed. Don't worry, I'll take care of you. You're just here with me.
Yeah. And then they...
They go off into the stars.
Yeah, and it fades out and
to a love song and then to credits.
Yeah, as they're cuddling. Yeah, and so by my interpretation, this is Harry is also a fantasy.
Mm-hmm. And so has been this whole time.
And so go back from the start. And Andrew Scott Adam saw a guy once come up to his room and has been fantasizing this whole time about what if we now have a relationship and this is a fantasy. Yeah. And this is
he is using in his own just mind. Like he's using his parents, he's using this man to process stuff.
Yeah.
To help him with his writing, to help him with his life, to help him with his grief. He is rebuilding relationships with both his parents and with Harry.
Yeah.
That ended abruptly.
And Harry is someone he didn't really know. He saw once.
Yeah.
And looked up in the window.
Looked up in a window, had an awkward drunken encounter, and was like, no, thank you.
Yeah. And
he's like, but what if?
And then he's resolved the issue with his parents, and he's like, okay, we're going to try it with this guy. He gets to the room. The guy is dead. From that night. And so he starts thinking, well, what if I'd let him in? And then he goes with that fantasy. And it ends on that fantasy of, you know, like it. Or I don't know, like him still in his own head. Is it...
I can still take care of him.
Yeah. It's because he thinks, oh, it... If I had never... Or I don't know. If I had let him in, maybe things would have been different. And then he kind of just goes, runs with that, and is like, I'm going to fantasize about taking care of this person.
Yeah.
Who conveniently isn't there to have there be any conflict with reality.
Right.
And so the entire movie is just him, essentially.
Yeah, it's just Andrew Scott.
In my interpretation.
Yeah, and it's about a writer and how he processes grief through... creating avatars of people that he can have good relationships with.
Yeah.
He's a man alone fantasizing about having really good social relationships with family and friends.
Yeah.
And lovers.
Which ends up being pretty depressing.
It ends up as a pretty dark movie, even though the film plays it quite romantically and tenderly and like emotionally...
Because in my interpretation, all of that love that could exist does not exist in the end, and we learn it's all in his head.
Yeah.
So there is no love. There is only his fantasy of love.
Yeah.
Which I found incredibly depressing. It's still
just a dude alone in his apartment.
Yeah.
And again, the movie has been so not... It's been so sincere and earnest and... maybe melancholic, but hopeful and uplifting, you know, this whole time.
Yeah.
And then that film takes it as it is just bitter, part of the bittersweet.
Yeah.
It is bitter. It is so bittersweet, but you're having a really hard time tasting the sweet, but it is in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So it's a Willy Wonka situation. Where it's this movie that seems really, really happy, but actually is not that happy, but it still plays it that way. And it's not what you thought you were getting, but that's actually really interesting, and it's an interesting text.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you walked out of the theater really, really liking it.
I did, and I walked out still on the wave of, like, the first 95%, that was really positive and like really, you know,
optimistic.
And so then the ending hit and I was like, whoa, that's okay. That's an interesting ending. And I was like, okay, that's really interesting. They totally went there with that. Okay, that's kind of brutal. And, you know, I respect the fact that that was...
I respect that swing.
I respect that swing. That was totally, wow, okay. And so, but I was still, like, feeling, you know, the wave of me really liking it. And then I get home, and, you know, and I was kind of, you know, singing its praises all the way to the car, you know, get home. And then that last scene hits me where, like, all of that, like, you know, love isn't real, you know, all of this love is just in your head aspect hits and out. And yeah. And so I dropped pretty fast and was like, wow, now I'm really depressed.
So with me, this has been a ghost movie. This is about haunted spaces.
Yeah.
A man who is a writer. Yeah. Who has come across a haunted house and is using that for his advantage. So now it turns out that he's been screwing a ghost. Yeah. And that this character presumably took their own life because they had joked about it during this first drunken encounter. So now we have a ghost of a person who took their own life. And they were completely hopeless. And they didn't even realize it, this ghost. And Andrew Scott, and they realize it now. And Andrew Scott's like, don't worry, I'll take care of you. It's like, I didn't take care of you when you were alive. I didn't let you in, but I can do it now. And this shot, the second to last shot, is of them cuddling in bed. And just Paul Mescal is snuggling into Andrew Scott. And just, thank you. He's smiling. He's just, thank you for taking care of me. Mm. And Andrew Scott's like, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You know, let me put on a song. Mm. And this whole film, I have been placing myself in Andrew Scott's shoes. Like, he is my avatar. You know, he is my entryway into the film as this writer who's dealing with unresolved issues with his parents and trying to have a good relationship with this other person. And now I am shunted into the shoes of Harry. This was a lonely queer person who reached out, got rejected, killed themselves, and is now going to be comforted in their death by the person who rejected them. And that is so bleeping depressing.
Yeah.
And I was like, is this what I am? Because I'm just a sad queer person who is just gonna die, and then maybe I can get comforted or something. But like, I can't, there's no way for me out of this. I can't survive this. I'm just gonna die. I can't live without being saved by someone. And I just found that so infuriating. And like, as unseen as I felt by Barbie, like walking out of Barbie, this movie made me feel truly, truly worthless. And so, yeah, my more literal interpretation resulted in a very different response as someone who deals actively with suicidal ideation most days. So, yeah,
I kind of hate this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's better than Barbie. I like it more than Barbie, but I also like it less than Barbie. Yeah, so the ending of this film kind of disgusts me. And I see your interpretation, and that is still depressing, but not nearly as bad as mine. But yeah, once I kind of told you mine, you were like, oh, I see why you hate this.
Yeah.
Because I was like talking about how I hate it, and you were like, what? And then when we realized that we had radically different interpretations of the text, it was like, oh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Both ended up being depressing.
Yeah.
But in different ways.
In different ways.
Yeah.
To different degrees.
Different math, and, you know, got to a similar...
Yeah. So. Yeah. That was our double feature at the Cinema 21.
Yeah.
That was our double feature.
Yeah.
And also Dropout.
A great deal of Dropout.
Yeah.
Copious amounts.
Yeah. A double feature and a double dose of Dropout. Yeah. All right. Oh, hi, River. Hi.
I like her little grumbling noises.
Yeah. Hi. Aww.
Oh, scary.
What's she doing, Beaver?
Beep.